Welcome to the Not Just a Pony Ride podcast, presented to you by Hetra University. If you've landed here, you're probably passionate about how horses help people. This podcast is for anyone who helps others experience the benefits of horses or those who have experienced it themselves. If you're in the equine assisted services industry, we're here to help you. If you're here just to learn more, you're in the right place. Welcome to your community of like-minded people, where you will hear stories, education, science, and explanations about how what we do is so much more than just a pony ride. And now, from the Hetra campus in Gretna, Nebraska, here's your host, occupational therapist and CTRI, Katie Ott.
Welcome to the show, Mandy.
Thank you so much.
Well, we're excited to have you, and today is a different kind of episode because you have my voice on here that you're used to hearing, and we have a co-host today.
I'm Shelby Schultz. I'm the program manager at Hetra.
And she's going to help me out asking some questions today with Miss Mandy. So Mandy, introduce yourself and kind of explain your background a little bit.
Excellent. My name's Mandy Cleveland, and I'm the program director at Stable Straits Farm. We actually started Stable Straits Farm back in 2001. And I remember sitting on the couch vividly thinking, what are we going to call this thing? And we decided to create an environment to give riders with disabilities the opportunity to horse show, and then also focus on independence in their lives, that we could parallel that with the horses.
So what is your background, I guess? How did you get into partnering horses with, you know, kind of the therapeutic side of things?
Yes. In high school, I needed volunteer hours. It was not because I needed an orange jumpsuit, thankfully, but I was in National Honor Society and I needed to do some volunteer work. And I was riding competitively at the time. And I liked horses and I liked people. And I thought, well, this might be a really fun combination. So I decided that I would start volunteering at Riding Unlimited, which is in Ponder, Texas. And, you know, when you're a 16-year-old girl, and or probably any 16-year-old, you're just kind of insecure and uncomfortable in new situations. And I remember being so nervous about going to go do this. And I actually drove myself there in my car. And I met the people, and I was looking at this group of five riders. And I was like, okay, I can do this as long as they don't give me that guy right there. Because that guy, he's hard to understand. He's older. And I don't know, that just doesn't look like that would be the right match for me. And so I believe God has a sense of humor. So we all know that's who I got assigned, right? Was that guy. And so I went to go push him in his wheelchair to the horse and to the ramp. And I hadn't pushed anybody in a wheelchair before, and it was outside. And so I hit a piece of gravel, and he pancaked face first into the gravel. And I was horrified. And I just thought, oh gosh, if spontaneous combustion could be a thing and I could just explode right now and not be around, life would be perfect. And I was just absolutely mortified. And I thought, what is there anything worse than throwing somebody out of their wheelchair, pancake first, on their face? And then his name was Jim. And he rolled over and looked at me and was dying laughing. I mean, laughing and pointing and tears and scoffing. And I thought, oh, okay. So then everybody came over and helped me scoop him back into the chair and got him over to his horse. He didn't fall off the horse, thankfully. Just after doing that, that moment in time could have been a really big turning point. That could have been the last time that I ever even showed up anywhere. But thankfully, with his sense of humor and grace, and it kind of bonded us together, and we stayed friends for many years. He recently passed away. And it really plugged me in, because I really developed, I mean, I thought, well, gosh, if this guy can still love me after I pancaked him on his face, then, you know, this might be an environment that would be fun and safe and I could get back to. So I didn't push many more chairs after that, but I did help with the horses. So that was good.
Very good. And you're so then you went on to get your PATH certification, correct?
Yes, that's correct. So I'm a little bit old. And back then, the only school that had therapeutic writing was St. Andrews in North Carolina. And so I got this package in the mail from St. Andrews, and it looked like a really cool school, and it talked about therapeutic writing. So I contacted them and said, hey, can you send me some more information about this? I think this might be something I'm interested in. And they said, yes, of course, we have a packet. Well, I'll send it to you. I said, oh, I think I have the packet. And they're like, oh, no, we don't send it unless you request it. And so I told her what the packet looked like. And sure enough, somehow, magically, I had gotten this packet in the mail. And my parents always had a deal that if we wanted to go to out-of-state school, we had to get enough scholarship money to make it cost like in-state tuition. And so we went and visited, and I was able to get academic scholarships and horseback riding scholarships. And my parents said yes. And so that was great. So I went to St. Andrews and did all the therapeutic writing they had to offer, and then transferred back to Texas Women's and got a degree in special ed and a secondary in history. So I would have a backup plan, as my dad suggested, that I could teach in the classroom if this horse thing didn't work out. So
and look at you, it did. It worked.
I mean, holding on to it, right? So that's good.
Very good.
So tell us a little bit about how you got, how you made the move from doing traditional adaptive writing to a competition team. How, mm-hmm. What did that look like, and how did that grow at your center?
Yes, that's a great question. So, so many of these things have very like specific stories that were just eye-opening for me. And I had this nice young lady, and she had shown in Special Olympics, and that's all she'd done. Because at that time, like I said, I'm old, the only therapeutic riding horse shows available were Special Olympics. So I would take her and a couple others to some little like 4-H shows or little backyard open shows. And I remember throwing her on this nice paint horse and throwing her in a maiden walk trot class. And their definition of maiden was the rider couldn't have won 4 blue ribbons. And so I threw her in there and had her what I thought was prepared and sat in the stands to watch her. And you know how you never know whose mama you're sitting next to in the stands? And so this person starts shuffling around, and he's getting angry, and he's like, it's obvious to me his two daughters are in the arena, and he's very upset about something, but I can't quite figure it out what he's upset about. And then finally he points to my rider that qualifies for Special Olympics and said, this is ridiculous. I can't believe it. There's no way that kid hasn't won 4 blue ribbons. And I thought, oh my gosh, with horses, we have a level playing field. You know, whatever weakness we have, we can find the right horse that can scaffold that for us. And I had a lady one time later who used her wheelchair to get up to the ramp, and she transferred onto the horse. And she looked at me and she said, you know, Mandy, when I'm sitting in that chair, I have two bad legs. But as soon as I got on this horse, I have 4 good ones. And that really hit my heart, because then she was just going to leave her chair behind and go take care of business, go ride her horse, do what we love to do. So that little moment in time, I thought, we have got to follow up with this. This is, I mean, if the riders want to go, we need to go. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was working at Riding Unlimited, and the board of directors didn't really see the vision in that. And they saw it more of like a liability. I mean, we needed special insurance. We'd have to have a tow vehicle. I mean, there was definitely a lot of expense. And there was no proven return on investment on that. Like, it was, I was like, hey, this is something crazy. Can we do it? And they weren't willing to take the chance. But I was really sure this was something special. I saw the moment. I saw her ride against all those other people. And she was successful. And I thought, we've got to follow up with this. So that's when we started Stable Straits Farm, with the idea that we would make competition available. It's never forced on anybody, but we try to have opportunities available. And there's probably about 12 to 15 opportunities a year that we provide our students. Some are really big horse shows, like the NSBA World in Tulsa. That's huge for us. The competition is deep. I think there were 38 in their trail class, and not like 38 people happen to show up with horses from their backyard, but like 38 nice horses and talented horse people. And then we do some smaller shows too, where maybe we're the only farm that showed up. And so it almost feels like a family thing. So, But it was something that I really thought was important that we'd be able to add and have available for the riders.
One big question that I have, and we don't have a lot of opportunity in Nebraska right now. But one question that I have is, how does your program, number one, bill for this, and number two, fund this? Because I would imagine that this is, has a lot more expense tied to it than our traditional writing lessons that are housed in our own facilities. So how do you guys kind of navigate that?
Especially if you show like a whole weekend or something.
Or a week, you know, or going to the NSK world. That's not a cheap endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That is true. So we try to do everything we can to keep it as affordable as possible. Now, one negative is that week that I'm at NSBA, I am not at the barn teaching lessons, right? And so if I don't have a sub, then we don't have the income coming in from those lessons. And let's say I even did have a sub, but I took 3/4 of the herd with me to the horse show, then what are they going to ride? Brooms? You know, I mean, it's going to make it pretty hard. Mm-hmm. So we had to make it so that we would have return on investment. And in the beginning, it was slim pickings. Like, it was a 2-horse trailer and a little, you know, F-150 pickup and just me and a handful of volunteers. And we didn't have a whole lot of profit margin on that, but I wasn't costing us a whole lot of money either, right? But then as we grew, like when we go to NSBA this summer, I think I have 15 showing in the independents and 8 showing in the supported. So, but they're paying for it. We don't donate that. Now they can go help secure fundraising to go towards the horse show team. And that works really well, but it's not something that we can give away for free. Whereas I feel like in the arena, if you have somebody that has a financial need, it's easier to kind of supplement that. But the horse shows, they pay for. Mm-hmm. We don't charge as much as an able-bodied program would charge, but they do pay for the traveling expenses. So they'll pay for coaching at the horse show. They'll pay for the trailering at the horse show. And then they pay for the coaches' hotel rooms. And then I give our instructors like a meal stipend for the day, because, you know, you're not eating your ramen noodles at home. So I got to take care of you. And then there's a per day fee there. So I try to make it about $75 a day for like the coaching part per rider. And then the industry standard is usually between $1 and $1.50 a mile. But I try to look at what is it going to cost me gas wise and wear and tear to get there and home, and then divide that among the riders. So not necessarily, it's not really close to the dollar or $1.50,
sure.
But it's just so expensive. And you got to think that we do get other benefits from doing that. Like, we've met donors that probably would have never donated anything before. Mm-hmm. And our quality of horses skyrocketed when we started showing, because people may have had a kid that moved up a horse and Fluffy's sitting at home, but was the best walk trot horse in the history of the world. Well, they don't want Fluffy on the payroll anymore, and they don't want to just send them to a stranger, but they know they'll see me at the next horse show. So then they send me the horse. Mm-hmm. So my quality of horses went way up. Whereas people that, you know, if the circle you roll in is a trail riding circle, you're probably going to get trail riding horses donated. Mm-hmm. If you do barrel racing, you'll probably get barrel horses. But for us, it really made a big difference to get a really nice, easy stock bred horse to be able to use in the lesson program.
I think that was kind of what I was thinking too, is that like here at Hetra, we're doing lessons, you know, or, you know, sessions with adaptive riding and doing all that and, you know, schooling our horses similar to what you would to get ready for a horse show. But our horses live here all the time. We don't take them anywhere else. So we know exactly how they're going to perform in our arena, but then you take them to, you know, someplace else to show or do something, then do we know that they're going to act the same way? And I think, like you said, having horses that have been in the industry and showed and stuff, that makes them more reliable for your riders that, you know, maybe do have a disability.
Absolutely. It makes a big difference to have a horse that spent his whole career in the show ring, and then we take them and they're older. And then I don't know if you guys ever use them, but we use those little palms in the ears. You know, I would just hug the person whoever invented those. That makes biggest difference. So, you know, it really has helped us, because we, like I said, we've got tack and show clothes and these horses donated. it really has added a lot to the program. And then for me as a coach, I like it because my lessons are more focused. You know, I'm, you know, you can walk, track, canter on the rail all day long, but when we start doing patterns, then we're starting to get a little bit more specific about this is going to happen here. Or you're going to use your leg there. And then for the riders, it's also a multi-step directions. You know, the moms are like, oh no, he can't remember seven steps. We're only on four steps for his IEP at school. But somehow when they're on the horse and they're motivated and then they have those little either cones or logs that kind of like prompt them, then they can remember 7 or 10 steps of directions at a time. Well, that's a huge life skill.
Mm-hmm. And I think applying those skills to something you're prepared for that or preparing for that you're excited about, right? Like,
right,
you didn't just go to horse, you know, your horse lessons today and do a pattern. You're doing a pattern to prepare for, you know, a class or a competition, which I think is interesting.
This episode of the Not Just a Pony Ride podcast is sponsored in part by
Equiforce. Equiforce is a database that allows you to track every facet of your organization, from horse, donor, and volunteer management to scheduling, grant tracking, incident reports, and tracking participant progress too. This is not a one-size-fits-all setup. Instead, Equiforce personally works with you to learn how your facility functions and takes note of your specific terminology so that they can create a unique system to match the needs of your organization. And of course, Equiforce provides an ongoing training and support so that your database can grow with you. Visit them at www.equiforce.com. That's EQUI-FORCE.com.
So Mandy, do you have participants that come to you and then kind of organically grow through your program and eventually come onto the competition team? Or do you have more participants that seek your program out specifically for the competition team?
It's probably about half and half, where we have had, you know, the riders that started their very first time they touched reins were with us, and then we pushed them and they grew and then they start showing. But then I've also had other students come from other programs that they just didn't offer a whole lot of showing. And that was something they really enjoyed. And one time a year wasn't enough for them. And so then they came to us. But speaking of growing, one thing that I love is by having these other opportunities, we've had students that have come into the program. We were the first ones that handed them their reins, took them to the horse shows, and then either they've come back and started volunteering at the horse shows or also helping to coach. So we had two students that started in the program that we were the first ones to hand them their reins, and they grew up in the program, showing in the program, and then got PATH certified because they enjoyed it so much and then wanted to start coaching and coach at the horse shows with us. And then we also have some that worked up the levels of the competition, and EWD just wasn't enough of a challenge for them anymore. So now they're showing an amateur or youth and coming back to volunteer. So it just, to me, felt like it gave them so much more room for growth and let this continue on, you know, through adulthood. And the goals just kept coming, which was really exciting.
So Shelby and I both horse show. Shelby a lot longer than me. Shelby taught me. So for the folks at home listening that might know a little bit about showing, what kinds of classes are your participants showing in?
So the different breed associations offer classes for us, which is great. And then with that, they usually have like a rail class, which is more judged on the horse, you know, instead of the rider. And then they also have like the pattern classes that are judged more on the rider. So they offer the pleasure and the horsemanship, the eck and the hunter under, the showmanship and the trail. And then depending on which breed association it is, do they have supported or walk trot canter? Those are kind of the minimum three that I see. And then some of our stock shows in our area, like the Fort Worth Stock Show, Austin Stock Show, and Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, they have much more classes available, like a walk only independent or walk only with a helper, all the way up to the walk trot canter. And for them, they don't typically do the pattern work. They do the rail class, like what we would typically see as like a Western pleasure, but they judge the rider's position as a horsemanship on the rail, which is nice because if we're all on donated horses, really, do we want our horses judged or do we want our students, you know, being judged for their merit?
How many shows do you usually take your teams to a year?
We usually have about 12 to 15 a year that we go to. There was a series with the Palomino Association in Texas that had three for us, and that kind of changed. They were standalone events, and we had three of those a year, and they didn't have those this year. So that kind of brought our number down a little bit, but we're looking at some other opportunities.
Are there other centers that are capitalizing on these competition teams, or are the other people who are showing in the EWD, which is Equestrians with Disabilities, are those kind of individuals from coming as individuals, or are there other barns that are bringing large groups of people?
So like when we go to the NSBA, there's typically two large groups, and one is from Illinois, and then we're fairly large there. There might be two or three other kind of smaller groups that bring a handful, but what's fun to see is somebody has a brother or a friend, or, you know, and they borrow their sister's horse or their brother's horse, and then they, you know, stick them in the arena to show. And it's, to me, that seems really neat to like unify the family, that we all show horses. This is something all of us do. Mm-hmm. And as horse people, we know how hard some of those maneuvers are. So when we see somebody who might struggle with, you know, something that seems easy at home, but then be able to nail that lead change right on time, then that really helps kind of, you know, build them up. So, to answer your question, it kind of depends on where we go. The stock shows that we go to typically are large clubs and no individuals, but the breed shows ones, it's a pretty decent mix. So,
cool. So for centers that were interested in starting a competition team, yeah, what would be your recommendation? So how would you recommend people get started on this journey if they wanted to join you?
I would definitely go watch first, or if you can find a program in your area and go volunteer for a weekend. I try to talk the other instructors from other centers into coming and just spending a weekend with us. Just once you're in the trench and you see it, then it doesn't feel quite so hard to do. And then I would just say, jump in, pick one or two students that their parents have great senses of humor, and then make them be your guinea pigs, because things are going to go askew. They do every time, you know, right? Our part of the universe is very, well, I don't know, maybe y'all's lessons always go as you predicted. Mine typically no. I have an idea how it's going to go, but it's typically different. So I would just pick like two riders with parents that are fun and pleasant to be around, and just go try, you know. But if you can find a center that's going, and just ask to volunteer, or, you know, just to kind of feel it, because if you didn't grow up showing yourself, then it just feels so far away, you know, like, oh my God, there's no way I can do that. But really, I mean, as long as they have pants on and get in the arena on time, you're doing great, you know? Sometimes I mean, I literally had one girl that was stripping in the show ring, and I was like, hey, so our shirt stays on until we're out. That's how that works. So, I mean, just silly stuff happens sometimes. Mm-hmm. But to me, what we talked about, what the center received from it, but beyond that, you know, when you go to a horse show, it's a whole lot of waiting, right? Mm-hmm. So our riders are sitting around the stalls waiting. Sometimes there's spontaneous dance parties where they turn the music up, or sometimes they bring their Uno cards. And if they're not in school, then what social time are they having? And so here's the most safe social atmosphere with all our group of riders. We call it a family, with our family all sitting around. And, you know, some of them just sort of are on their phone, but adjacent to one another. Like, that's as much as their social bubble will allow, whereas others are just nonstop talking to each other. And then even if they want to walk around the stalls of the other people, you know, horse people are kind, you know, and very embracing. And I'm not going to drop my kids at the mall, but I wouldn't worry about them in a horse show barn, you know, talking to new people. And everybody can say, well, how's that horse bred? You know, that question starts any conversation.
So right.
It's just, it's been such a great, safe social atmosphere for them. And then we all go to dinner, and they're reading off a menu, and they're ordering off a menu. I mean, those are life skills that we need, that when this started, I had no idea that was going to be a part of it, but it's probably has more value than which diagonal they're on, you know, to right. be able to order a menu. So it's been really a neat thing to watch grow. The other thing I would tell the instructors is just keep your eyes open, because all these little moments that you experience, if you can tuck them away and put them in your pocket, then when you're selling it to your other clients, then you can really truly sell it. You know, it's beyond whatever 79 cents ribbon they walked out of the arena with. Right. It's the social time. And there have been times with our riders that one of my girls, she's so kind, and I happened to be her volunteer in the pen, and she watched one of her friends from a different farm compete. And she was like, I've never seen her ride a pattern so good. I hope she wins it. That was so great. And you know, that's important. That's that true love across the farms. That's really cool. So
I noticed that too. I'm fairly new to the horse showing deal. A lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But that is one thing that I notice about it, is like when you sit there and watch patterns, like I've watched friends of mine, you know, show in a class, and I'm like, wow, you know, this other person did amazing. Like that was fantastic. I hope they win. Even though you have friends in the class or you're in the class yourself, like it's a true respect for like the art of what it is and that person and that horse, versus it being like, when you say competition, it gets kind of that heavier tone, I feel like sometimes. And I think families might shy away from that. Like, oh, a competition. We don't, you know, I don't want to get into that. But like, horse showing really is something that's a different lens of competition than I've ever seen before.
I totally agree with you. And that partnership you have with the horse, that really it's you guys as a team competing against who you were at the last horse show. Mm-hmm. And did you accomplish the goals that you had set for yourself at the last horse show? So it's special. And sometimes your horse lets you down, but sometimes he saves your tush. So, you know, that's a life lesson too, because we don't get to control every single second of our universe. You know, there's other things that come into play.
That's right. Well, before I let you go, Mandy, we've enjoyed having you so much. I think what you're doing, your program is so unique and so cool and offering a lot of really, really awesome opportunity for people. So thank you for what you do. But before I let you go, the wrap-up question for this season of the podcast is, if you could go back in time, you could jump in a time machine and give your young professional self some advice, what would you tell her?
That is such a great question. And I was very young when I started this, like out of high school, first started teaching, you know, and I really had no idea that it was going to work. And I think that I could have enjoyed the journey a little bit more if I knew everything's going to work. Just keep cruising, keep swimming. You know, it's all going to work. That I think would have been a huge thing to know. And then the other thing as a business person that I wish that I had kind of picked up on earlier is just always keep your overhead low, because anytime you can lower overhead, you get a raise. So those two pieces would have been great to hear. But it's when I say I remember sitting on the couch wondering what we were going to call it, that it is just a very, very vivid memory. And we had $1,000 that we could spare out of our checking account that we put into the business account, and we thought this is what we're going to start with. And I just had no idea if it was going to work or not. And so it's been a really fun journey. So I think maybe I could have had less Pepto-Bismol in the budget if I had just known that it was going to be okay.
Wait, I want to know, are you still showing yourself, Mandy?
Well, I have started showing again. So I have two daughters and they're amazing. And it was important to me to be a cool mom and then also try to take care of my business. So I kind of quit riding and spent most of my time in sneakers growling at people. And I mean, teaching and coaching lovingly. And my girls showed, which was so much fun. And I would stick them in their little 5 to 9 classes. And then I was sticking them in 13 and under. Well, they have expressed to me that now that they're 14 to 18, I should be allowed to show as well. So yeah. I've dusted off my britches and I borrow my oldest daughter's horse sometimes and show. And I have a very nice time. And my daughters bring me my Gatorade whenever I want it. So they have good life.
They're good show moms.
They're good show moms. Exactly. So, but it is good. Fun to be back for sure.
Good. We always want to, even though we're working, we got to find a little bit of joy in it too.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks again, Mandy. We appreciate you so much and hope to see you down the trail.
Awesome. Thank you all. I hope I bump into you guys at a horse show.
Yeah, we'll have to introduce ourselves if we're there.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to another episode. Until the next one launches, stay connected to our community by joining the Not Just a Pony Ride Facebook group. There, we share exclusive educational content, answer your questions, and review new and exciting developments for the EAS community. Don't forget, if you have suggestions for future episode topics or a lead on a great guest that you think our audience would enjoy, click on the link in the show notes or visit us at hetrauniversity.org. This podcast is presented by Hetra University, an educational arm of the Heartland Equine Therapeutic Riding Academy. Hetra University's mission is to provide high-quality educational offerings to our participants and the EAS community. If you'd like to help us work toward our mission, you can make a donation by visiting us online at hetra.org. Again, I can't thank you all enough for helping Hetra change lives one stride at a time.